Welcome to Business Steps Up, a presentation of HIALI, one of the recognized voices in Long Island business. We'll focus on cutting-edge topics important to the Bi-County region and beyond. So sit back, relax, and listen to some of Long Island's most influential business leaders here on Business Steps Up.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this segment of HIALI Business Steps Up. This program really started through COVID, when we began to take a look at some of the magnificent things that our members and the business community were doing really to help out people through COVID, whether it be supply PPP money, supply masks, or things that needed to be done, and then beyond. And we continued it really to highlight some magnificent companies and some of the real good things that are going on Long Island. So I am extremely fortunate today to have Larry Pappas. He is the CEO of Forte Construction Corp, and Matt and Luke Tesoriero. Did I do that right? I hope I did that right. I did that right. Great. The CEO and managing partner of the Guac Shop Mexican Grill with us. They are our Business Achievement Award finalists. And for many of you watching, you know that the Business Achievement Awards for the HIALI has been a 30-year passion that we began when we talked about how important it is to really recognize excellence on Long Island. So you will, if you join us on September 26th, you will meet these gentlemen, and you're going to hear a little bit more about their story now. So let's begin. Larry, I'm going to begin with you. Tell us about your story. Tell us about Forte Construction and what your journey looked like.
How far back do you want to go, Terry? Forte started in 2010. I had a background in engineering and construction, educated in engineering. I worked for a New York City contractor for about 11 years after graduating, and in 2010, I connected with my partners who were running their dad's electrical company called Tap Electric, which was founded in 1969. They came up with the idea of bringing me over, having the general contracting experience to start Forte Construction. And we started really, from ground zero. They did put some cash into the company to help it get started. But outside of that, it was me, a desk and a chair and a computer, basically. And, in our first year in business, we generated about $3 million in revenue. And now we're doing over $300 million a year in revenue. So in 14 years. That's it in a nutshell. I mean, a heavy concentration in public work. We've joined the ownership of all the companies. So it's Forte Construction, it's Tap Electric, BR Construction, Sterling Mechanical, RHCW. It's a couple of all construction-based companies. One's electrical, one's mechanical, one does interiors. That's the short version, Terry. I'd be happy to get into it in more detail if you like.
But so a follow-up to that question, what you saw much growth, right? So what do you attribute that growth to?
So, if you ask me that question, every year the answer might be different. We're learning every year. As people, we learn. We think there's nothing else to learn, but I'm learning every day. Looking back in hindsight, I think a lot of the growth, if you asked 5 years ago, I would say, it's because, we're really smart. We're really good at building things. But that's not really what it is. It's really about how we treat people internally and externally. And I think that has resulted in growth. Treating your employees well, treating your customers well, treating your subcontractors well, treating the public and the community well, it all comes back to you. I mean, it's in some way a scientific form of karma, right? I mean, if you treat everyone right, then no one has any reason to want to do wrong by you. And in this world, in this business, everybody kind of crosses paths more than once. So I think if you continuously do the right thing, it'll come back to you. And I believe that's really what got us to where we are, is just treating people right. The golden rule, it's that simple. Treat others as you'd like to be treated. And in my benefit, I was an employee for the first half of my career in this business. So I know very much what it feels like to be an employee. I've been an owner, meaning I've hired contractors, so I know what it's like to be an owner. I've been a subcontractor, so I know what it's like to be a subcontractor. So I try really hard to think about how everybody else feels about a situation and treat them the way I want them to treat me. Not always treat them the way they're treating me, but treat them the way I'd want them to treat me. And the word gets out, Terry. It's made recruiting easier. It's made getting work easier. It's made, holding on to relationships easier. We get better prices from our subcontractors and vendors as a result. So I really think that's been the secret recipe, in the sauce.
Yeah. And, I've said this to you when we were there for the Business Achievement Awards, but you can feel it when you walk into your organization, not only a magnificent building and what you put together there. But you can feel that you really care about your employees and you really care about other people. So good for you.
Thank you.
So how about you, from Matt and Luke? I have to say before you start, so when we walked in to meet Luke and Melissa at the time, I was absolutely delighted and shocked at the same time that Luke is such a young professional. I thought that was really great. And it has nothing to do with your age. I don't mean to bring up the age as much as I do that you guys have just built something so magnificent. I expected to see someone much older, but was delighted for you guys. So tell us about the Black Shot, how it started and what that journey looked like.
Sure. Thanks, Terry. So for Luke is young. He's 24 years old, and he's been working in the business since he started out as a bus boy in our full service restaurant, Park Place. And he's earned it. You know, he's definitely earned the seat at the table. But for Block Shot, you know, basically what had happened was my background was in the nightlife promoting business throughout college. And when I graduated college, my two best friends, my best friend's dad, we kind of came together and we said to ourselves, you know, what are we going to do? We always had this entrepreneurial spirit, but what is it that we're going to do? And we created this thing called the Candy Club. And what the Candy Club was essentially was a forced savings group amongst a couple of friends and one mentor. And every Friday we contributed $100. So I like to tell everybody, you know, that's going through this, that has an entrepreneurial spirit, try to get started, that it literally costs us $100 to get Block Shot started. And it was discipline from there and consistency. Every Friday we made that contribution. And over time we incrementally increased our investment, but that's how it got started. And from there, we were able to make our first venture, which was Park Place. Went into Park Place as a full service restaurant. It was awesome, very successful. It was a neighborhood gem, but it did not, it didn't warrant having two managing partners running the day-to-day. So I kind of tailed off being a little bit of a promoter, and on that side of it, I went into real estate. And I got to meet some really great people. I learned how to ask for the order. I learned how to get to decision makers. And I learned how to negotiate leases. And while I was doing that, I found myself eating at this place called Chipotle a couple times a week. When we didn't have client meetings, we were, you know, it was, let's, where could we go get something that's quick, relatively healthy, and get back to the office so that we can pound the phones and canvas and that sort of thing. And while I was there, I fell in love with the operation, but there were some things that I felt like that we could do better or that could be done better. And that was really when Block Shot was born, the concept of it. And, you know, 2 years later, we opened our first store in Garden City on 7th Street. And Luke kind of had graduated from busboy at that point. And we brought him in over there. He was the head burrito roller. And we learned how to roll burritos. And we designed the menu so that it can be healthy. And we wanted to go healthier out. So some of the people in the Mexican category kind of go for the cheat day. We wanted to be very health conscious. That's kind of why we came up with our performance bowls and have done a lot with athletes and, you know, circulate around performance. And then from there, we felt like we had caught lightning in the bottle with our first store. And we just kind of went for it during COVID. We expanded. So Block Shot started, you know, relatively about 2 years prior to COVID. And as COVID was coming on site, that we were set to open our second location. And we kind of just saw a huge opportunity with online ordering, which, you know, had fundamentally been about 20% of our business, you know, business plan. And so when COVID had, you know, was in full effect, it was basically 100% of our business. And with our real estate background and some of the landlord connections that we had, we were able to expand pretty quickly.
That's great. It's a great story. And, you know, the commonality already is all of you kind of, right, Larry, you work there, kind of work your way up. Matt, you work there, work your way up, and that's really the best way, I think, in any business. Not that it has to happen that way, but that you appreciate what you're doing and you appreciate what your employees do. So, Matt, talk to us a little bit about, I can't even imagine starting something through COVID. I can't even imagine. And I know, as Matt said, a lot of online things. What were some of the other things that you were doing as a company, creative things you were doing? You talked to us about when we were there. Can you kind of get this going?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, COVID obviously it kind of leveled the playing field for a lot of businesses to kind of think outside the box and move quickly. I think our size at that point was one of our strengths. But we were just like everybody else. We kind of got initially blown back and you know, we were afraid we're going to lose everything. But, you know, we kind of made a strategic pivot and you know, we're a growth mindset company. So every day you're just trying to get better. So what can we do better? And we knew that consumer confidence was going to be a big thing. So we kind of went into a staff rotation model where we had our staff broken up into teams. And if anybody, you know, had, you know, come down with COVID or was in contact with it, we kind of were able to put that team on the sideline a little bit to kind of see what was going on. And we also suspended, we were one of the first businesses on the block to suspend in-store business indefinitely to kind of create that safe environment. And then from there, then we started to see the real challenges, which was, you know, procurement of products and supply chain issues like everybody else. I mean, like, we couldn't even, never in a million years, I think, open a Mexican restaurant, we were going to have challenges finding rice and beans, but we were having challenges finding rice and beans. So while we were dealing with, you know, massive crowds and trying to kind of get out there and pump through the order with less people than we normally would have staffed, we were also, you know, in our off hours trying to hunt down rice and beans so that we could be prepared for the next day. And we did a lot of stuff. We teamed up a lot with the hospitals and the healthcare workers. We did a lot of fundraising initiatives and stuff like that. And really our model kind of like as that on site was, we don't want to see, we were gearing up, like we knew it was going to be a tough time in our industry. And we were like, our goal right now is not necessarily to make money. Our goal is to not lose money and to, you know, keep our customers fed at a fair price, keep our staff safe and keep our customers safe. And we kind of like tripled down on that mindset, and the volume came in droves. And the volume is what, you know, built our business. We kind of, you know, started to really focus on data collection and that sort of thing. And we use that to just pour gasoline on the fire and continue to grow. At the start of COVID, we had Garden City open and our Jericho location, the big one that was sitting in right there, that Feed Me Tacos and Tell Me I'm Pretty. That's our private party space in the lower level there. And we had such great plans for that space because we were going to be the first fast casual concept that had, you know, a private party space where you could come make the mess in our house and you know, you just invite the guests and do it at a very economic price point. Packages start at $650 and we've had parties there at 40 people. That's what they end up spending. So really great opportunity, but during COVID, obviously that was a really bad plan. So now it's starting to come online and come back with, you know, with the party scene coming into play. And instead of just saying like, listen, we made this huge bet on this Jericho store, it was a big store in a corporate area that basically got shut down. We went out and we believed in ourselves and bet ourselves. We signed three more leases. We signed a lease in Freeport, in Wantagh, and in Eli Park, right across the street from LIJ. And we learned very quickly how to become multi-unit operators. And there was growing pains. You know, I could let Luke talk about some of that stuff, but you know, when you're running one store, you know, and you're kind of covering every square inch every day, you know, you don't know what you don't know until you're outside of, until you have to start doing it remotely from 100,000 feet. And you know, we saw some growing pains, but we were able to kind of, we have a great team. We have an unbelievable team. I mean, we would not be where we are. You mentioned Michelle earlier. She's been, you know, really the glue that keeps everybody together on the back end. And then we have some really, really strong guys on the front lines. And what's awesome is, you know, we talk about, we were kind of started global burritos and now we are where we are, but we have some people that came in, you know, at the minimum wage level in year one, working part-time, that are now area supervisors, you know, overseeing operations for three locations. So it's really exciting.
Wow.
Being said, why don't allow me to talk a little bit?
I mean, it's about resilience, right? So look, talk a little bit about, you told us about some of these very creative relationships that you have. Talk a little bit about Delphi. I told you that's my alma mater as well, so I'm just genuinely interested. And some of the things that you're doing with the schools that are just remarkably different than some of these other restaurants.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's no secret, part of our, you know, expansion model here at Box Shop is obviously to locate ourselves in close proximity to you know, campuses, universities, large schools, you know, and obviously being that, you know, Matt and I and yourself as well graduated, you know, from Adelphi, you know, our Garden City location is perfect with that. You know, we're extremely cognizant of the fact that it takes an army, you know, of supporters and an army of people who believe in us as operators and believe in the brand to be able to grow to where we're at. So we're very cognizant of that and you know, are constantly trying to, you know, conjure up ways to give back to them. So obviously university for us was number one. You know, not only with, you know, trying to navigate ways to be able to, you know, offer our product at a more, you know, tolerable price point for college students who are kind of scraping by trying to get themselves through school. You know, and additionally, you know, finding certain ways to be able to contribute to the philanthropy is a lot of these different groups, organizations, and teams that are involved in the campuses. So it started off for us relatively rudimentary. You know, we started off with a fundraising model that basically we labeled as like a burrito rally, where, you know, different, you know, sororities, fraternities, you know, sports teams, et cetera, were able to come in, promote the event, almost like the guest bartender model at like a full service restaurant, come behind the line and roll some burritos for, you know, their classmates and colleagues and, you know, in turn, be able to raise money, you know, back to these philanthropies. That's kind of where it started for us. And then, you know, obviously, you know, obviously Matt, you know, my brother, my partner, being a collegiate athlete and some friends and family, you know, we're pretty tied into the collegiate athlete, you know, community, and kind of understand that, you know, in today's day and age and in 2024, 2025, it's, you know, with the NIL concept, it's now much more difficult to be not only a collegiate athlete as far as making your decisions about where to go and what teams to align yourself with, but also, you know, from the faculty, coaches, and administration perspective. So we're actively trying to find ways to collaborate with those local universities such as Adelphi, LIU, St. John's, et cetera, and find ways to be able to not only attract and retain, you know, new and current talent, but also to continue to kind of grow and expand the reach and, you know, desire to attend those local universities. So that's part of our focus right now. We have a lot of amazing programs in the pipeline that we're working on that I can't get too, you know, granular with yet, but we're really excited to kind of roll this out at a much broader scale. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're just looking to be able to make a difference in any aspect of, you know, community that we can, you know, being that we have experienced, you know, a pretty, you know, nice level of success and, you know, we would not have been able to experience it without them. So it's a huge part of our focus on the day to day.
Yeah. And you know what? Kudos. I mean, talk about creative, right? Larry and I smirked at one point. I saw you smirk, Larry, because you think, what a great idea, right? To get these college kids involved, number one. Number two, we do a lot of work in workforce development and, you know, we talk about the mass exodus of young professionals, particularly on Long Island right now. So anything that we can do to keep them here, to understand community involvement, to get them involved in things is an absolute plus. So kudos to the both of you. Larry, talk to us a little bit about, I'm going to ask a combination question. You know, one of the things when we walked in that we were in awe of, we saw Forte Construction, is your sense of internal community and then talking about external community, some of the things you do externally as well. So first talk about employee engagement, what that looks like. You do a lot of cool things for your employees. And then so the out with community engagement.
Sure. Internally, we do a ton of, you know, what we refer to as team building or corporate events. You know, different departments we'll bring together. We'll get the purchasing department. They'll go out to Topgolf, and their, you know, their team leader will take them out and do an event there. We'll do company wide events. We do a couple on Long Island every year. We do a couple in the city every year. We do the Ducks picnic. We do paintball. We do ping pong. We do fishing trip out of Captree. You know, we just do a ton of stuff for employees. Some includes the families, like our Ducks event is an open invite. You know, employees come, they bring their spouses, their kids, they can bring their neighbor's kids. You know, it doesn't really matter to us. And it's a great event. They all get these little, with the arm, the bracelets, so the kids can go around and get, you know, all the ice cream they can eat. And they seem to love it. But it was very important to us that, you know, people throw around the term family. It's not really a fair, you know, it's not really an accurate depiction to say that a company is a family. Certainly is a team though, right? And we use the analogy to a baseball team, ultimately, you know, saying that at any given time, any player can be the most important person. You know, there's no bosses, there's no high level, there's no low level. It's a team of individuals that at any given time, any one of those individuals can be the most important person on the job. And that's why we felt it was important for them to all see together that way and interact in a way outside of the office that increased their chemistry or the camaraderie, if you will, the synergy, teamwork, whatever term you want to apply to it. But it seems to be working, Terry. To the second part of your question, you know, externally, we do a lot of charity work, and we kind of combine the two. We found many ways to make the charity work also team building. I mean, employees love the 5Ks, you know, they love, you know, participating in Habitat for Humanity or Make-A-Wish. So any way we can engage our employees and encourage them to participate in charity seems to have a, you know, couple of, it's a double win, you know. One thing that we do that's kind of interesting, we have the yearly staff pick charity event. I think we spoke about that, Larry. We cut a check at the end of every year. I think there's a day in November, it's called Giving Tuesday. And employees submit their charity, their favorite charity. We ask them to explain why it's their favorite charity and why it's personal to them. And then we do a blind judge contest. We don't have names on the patients, my partners in LA, and our marketing team will sit in the room and review them all and pick the charity that's not our favorite charity, but the one that seems like to be the most important to the employee that needed it. And then there'll usually be a follow-up or event, you know, big paper check that you get big pictures with. And a lot of these charities are just great. You know, the IRIE, you know, therapy horse charity, although I never heard of it. You know, the Butterfly Effect Project, you know, it's another one I never heard of. There's a Girl Scout troop, I think it's Troop 6000, which is for like, I think it's for girls who work with orphanages or something like that. I mean, I can get to more details. But we learn from these experiences ourselves. And that's been a big a part of our formula, I want to say, is it's trying to give back and, you know, apply that into the employee engagement. Did I answer your question, Eleanor?
And you know what, while you were talking, I thought, talk about great karma, right? Because you started with karma and you talked about that, you know, we don't do it. I'm sure none of you do it. I know we don't do it to get anything back. That's not what it's about yet. It kind of comes back somehow in triple fold, right?
Can I tell you a quick funny story about karma? I'll do it in less than 30 seconds. I graduated from Cooper Union. It's an engineering school in Manhattan. It was fully free when I went there, scholarship only. My son started going to school there just over 2 years ago. He just started his junior year. I always said that when I made it, I'm going to give back to the school. So earlier this year, even though my son now pays half tuition because they couldn't afford to keep it free, I said, I'm gonna do a scholarship there. And Forte Construction did a $100,000 scholarship, which was supposed to support, you know, a new student through the 4 years. Guess what? 3 months later, I get my son and I both get notices because we both subscribe to their, you know, newsletter. Cooper Union now, because it's financially stronger than it was a year ago, now senior year is going to be free for all students. It's so funny. Like, as soon as I decide to do so, and again, it's not because of my $100,000 that Cooper Union could afford. They have these huge donors that give millions and millions of dollars. But just like, you know, you use the word, I would think about that. Within months of doing something, which I thought was, you know, a nice thing to do, I committed long ago to do that if I could. And just months later, I get something back, you know, and something substantial, you know, a whole year's tuition.
Yeah. Don't kid yourself. There's a direct connection there, right? I mean, you're being humble, but there's definitely a direct connection there. So good to be here.
Thank you, Derek.
So let's talk a little bit. We only have a few minutes left, believe it or not. So let's talk a little bit about growth and your vision for growth. So Matt and Luke, I'll start with you, Matt. I know you're in Florida now, right? Opening up a new location. But what do you think that looks like for the next, let's say, 5 years? And let me add a caveat to that. And Larry, I'm going to ask you the same question. I'm always interested when I talk to business owners that expand on how they feel they're going to keep quality customer service, right, when they do that, because that's usually at least one of the biggest challenges. So have you a plan, or what do you think that'll look like? And how are you dedicated and committed to that customer service?
Yeah, so with Guac Shop, in terms of our expansion, you know, now right now we're currently sitting with 6 locations in Long Island, and we have a great team there, and we're going to continue to expand there probably on a pace of like 1 to 2 locations per year until we feel like the market is saturated. But we have, you know, a lot of room to grow. Few areas in Nassau County and you know, Suffolk County is wide open, so we're really looking to go there. We're not looking to go fast. We're looking to kind of go at our own pace. We want to make sure that the integrity of our product and the integrity of our team is intact. So we're not, you know, we are. I've learned in real estate that sometimes the best deal is when you've been, you know, if you turn it down. So we're not going super fast. We're going to, you know, be very strategic with our locations and that expansion. That being said, you know, I did relocate to Florida in Sarasota. And we're going to be opening our first Guac Shop location in East Bradenton, right off of 75, and strategically about 8 miles away from ING Academy. We're going to be doing a lot of stuff with NIL and with athletes. And we're hoping that we can have some success down here with Store One. And then once we do that, you know, our goal is to continue to expand probably at the same pace down here as Long Island. It takes some time for the stores to mature themselves, and it also takes time for us to develop our staff and find the staff, right? We want to find the right team members that are not just coming there for a paycheck, but also believe in the product and believe in the vision and our social responsibility. Something that's very important to us is that we want to give them an opportunity to achieve their financial dreams, right? So in order for us to do that, we need to expand and to you know, generate more cash flow. And allow them to kind of, you know, profit share and get on that path. So that's our vision. You know, as far as customer service goes, you're unique for service. I mean, it's the backbone today. And you know, we pride ourselves on that. And because of that, we're not going to just go out and sign, you know, 30, 40 leases, raise a bunch of money and go crazy with it. We want to be strategic and walk before we walk.
Great. Thank you. So follow up for you and, excuse me, because I can't remember the gentleman's name that was with you when we were there. What was his first name?
Oh, that was Samwell.
Samwell, right. So how does that fit into someone like Samwell's future, that expansion? What does that look like?
So, you know, obviously for us, you know, there's a certain level of financial success that I think every entrepreneur, you know, is cognizant of and is obviously motivated by. But for myself and that, I'm sure for Larry as well, you know, there's also like a different level of satisfaction that, you know, an entrepreneur can experience when they recognize that the team around them, not only themselves, are elevating and achieving, you know, their own financial goals. You know, so for somebody like Samwell, as you referenced, Samwell was somebody who, when he first joined our company 6 years ago, legitimately, he would be mad at me for saying this, but could not even hold a knife. And he was somebody who, throughout constant, you know, obviously leadership and training, you know, and guidance, you know, elevated himself, you know, largely you know, we provided him with the tools, but he was the one who achieved it, elevated himself into a position to be considered the first area supervisor of Blockshop Mix and Grill, and, you know, potentially the first regional manager one day as we continue our expansion. So for us, you know, promoting from within and recruiting, you know, talent that is, you know, maybe not a superstar right away, but somebody who's motivated by the idea of growth, somebody who's fond of the growth mindset, you know, that my brother and I kind of really try to portray throughout our team, and ultimately somebody whose, you know, attitude is aligned with the culture and the workplace environment that we, you know, every day, you know, seek to build. So, you know, we're really, you know, we're elated to see our staff, you know, not only Samwell, but, you know, the others within our company who are able to kind of take themselves from entry level positions and ultimately make a cognizant decision that, you know, what I want to continue to grow and you know, elevate myself within the company. And, you know, we're elated at the opportunity to be able to do that. And there are a lot of other, you know, employees within camp currently that we hope to extend the same opportunity to. And that really at the end of the day is our true goal and our true mission.
Yeah, which is great because, you know, I know business owners struggle with, I would often talk about, no one will really care about my business as much as I do yet. When you really invest that type of time into someone, they really become like an owner, right? They become someone who really, truly cares. So good for you. Good for you guys. That's great. Larry, how about for you? You're going to take us home.
I'll do it quick, but just real quick, I want to just clear up, I'm texting for formality. I'm the president of Forte, not the CEO. I don't know if that matters. And Troop 6000 is for girls living in temporary housing. So I mixed that up a little bit, but I wanted to clarify that.
Yeah.
Going back to your question, Terry, I mean, we're looking to expand in a variety of ways. I mean, one of them, we kind of have done it already. We're starting companies that have offered different services in the same geographic location. So the other thing that we're looking at is expanding our client base, going outside of our typical, you know, clients, which are state and city agencies. Certainly, we want to do more work out of Long Island. We're following the Midway Crossing project, the Suffolk Technology Park. I mean, there's some major stuff going on Long Island, which we're very interested in. But we're looking at other ways to expand too. I mean, you know, Matt, you know, you went to Florida. We want to go to Florida. You know, we would love to fly, but you need the right people. You know, and as Matt said, we're not looking to do it quickly. We're looking to do it the right way. I mean, but it's all about people, Terry. And if you find the right people, you can go anywhere and do anything, right? So we're trying to find the right people here locally to take on more work. And we're trying to find the right people in other markets. There's a lot of construction going on in Boston and DC and Chicago and Florida and all that. So I always have my eyes open. We're always talking to recruiters. We're always seeing who's out there and trying to spark up as many conversations as we can just to see if there's an interest from some, you know, professionals out there who want to get involved and help us start a new ventures. Much like my partners found me, you know, 14 years ago and started Forte. That's how we're looking to continue the growth outside of the New York area.
Great. And you have a great opportunity, not only on Long Island. I mean, we look at Long Island projects, Larry, that you mentioned, you will see a very large burst of just activity with the Midway Crossings, with the Shore Gates, the Station Yards, all those things that are going on. And but also, as you said, off of Long Island. So it's been good for you. I have to say for everyone who's watching and who will be listening afterwards, when we go in and we do these business achievement awards, we do the judging, I am always amazed that such different companies that have so much in common. And, you know, for the both organizations here and these three gentlemen, they were optimistic about, and they're optimistic about their future. They talk about good people in place. And, you know, they get it. They understand that the development of their businesses is about the development of their people. So, which is critical, right? So don't miss September 26th, please. We'll be there to celebrate is the Academy Awards of Long Island. It's a lot of fun, other than really just meeting some really cool CEOs and different businesses. So we hope to see you there. Thank you, gentlemen, for really taking your time to do this. We really appreciate you, and we'll see you all on September 26th as well.
Thank you, Terry.
Business Steps Up is a production of HIALI, one of the recognized voices for business on Long Island, and a powerful voice and economic engine for regional development. Check back for more interesting, thought-provoking episodes with some of Long Island's most influential business leaders. For more information, call us at 631-543-5355 or log on to hia-li.org.